Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. We're back live on the Peter and Pyle Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Richard Pyle, your host. Ryan is still with us. Welcome back from vacation there, Peter.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Yeah, we were hoping to get Al on again, but I know he's a little bit nervous about coming on, so we'll see if he calls in later. Pretty good show tonight. A little Major League Baseball news going on, World Series recap. NFL, and little NBA side notes, little college football notes. First and foremost, congrats to the Royals on their World Series win. The Mets, I think, relied on their pitching, but the Royals' offense was just red hot this postseason. From my thinking, the Mets have a lot of issues to address this coming off season, right, Peter?
I'm with you there, yeah. There was Cespedes and Murphy. Well, I thought they had great moments throughout the season, especially Murphy in the postseason. Just, it seemed like they didn't struggle to play in the World Series, but of course, you know, I think that's the unfortunate part. So I think the Mets are going to look for some more bats this offseason. I think that's going to be the biggest issue because the pitching is phenomenal, but it's just when you play the Royals, and I think this goes without saying, to play the Royals right now, you have to have more than a 2 or 3 run lead on these guys. So they'll roar right back like they did in Game 5. And it was unfortunate, but the Mets, you know, I got to give them credit. They played a lot better this year than I thought they were going to. So hats off to them, but congratulations to the Royals. Just a phenomenal World Series. And you know what, they deserve to win too because they haven't won in a long time either. So hats off to those guys.
One of the takeaways that I have for the game here, or for the series, is, like, of course, hats off to the Royals, and they deserve it, and man, did they play well. But for the Mets, it's not over. I mean, their pitching staff is, not only is it great, but it's also really young. So, I mean, it's easy for them to put pieces together from here. They're definitely on the right track, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them in more World Series games in the future.
Totally with you there. Matt Harvey's phenomenal. I mean, I've seen him since high school. Well, I saw him pitch in high school. I didn't see him pitch in college because he went out of state. But I like Matt Harvey a lot, and I respect him for wanting to stay in the game during Game 5. So, obviously, you know, I'm bummed as a Mets fan, but, you know, hey, they played a great season, so I can't be mad with them.
No. When you make it to the World Series, it's hard winning championships in all the sports. I think they even said Cespedes, they were pretty sure that this guy was going to jump ship and go to the AL. Like I said, that was a great series to watch if you're a huge baseball fan. The other news that came across our desks today was Dusty Baker was announced as the new manager Dusty Baker for the Nationals. Don't know what kind of impact that's going to have. The old manager, you know, that team was completely out of control. You had Jonathan Papelbon choking people out in the dugout. So I don't know. What do you guys think of this one?
I'm okay with it. I think that you're right, though. I mean, clearly the guy, he was out of control. I didn't particularly care for Papelbon choking that guy out. I just think it's pathetic that even happened. And I thought Dusty Baker did a pretty good job with the Reds when he was there. I think he's halfway decent manager. He's won games in the major league as a player. He's won a World Series. He's been an All Star, so he knows what it takes to have to win. You know, clearly, the Nationals are a good team. And I think with the new manager, it'll create a little more competition in that division with somebody that hopefully can have control over his team and not allow players to find the dugout, which is inexcusable.
Yeah, Dusty Baker seems more of a no-nonsense guy. I don't think you're going to have those kind of situations when he's the manager there. But the real question is, can they win, and can they, like, turn the this team around under him, and that's to be seen. But I agree. I think Dusty, he's a pretty decent manager, and I think that he has more to offer there than what they had. I think it's definitely an improvement.
Yeah, and I think the other name announced was Don Mattingly took over somewhere else. Can't remember who it was. That was the other Major League Baseball move that occurred over the course of the week. Miami Hurricanes, me and you actually talked about this Sunday morning before we got into the football, Ryan. The big win against Duke Blue Devils with an 8 lateral kickoff return. Now they're saying it's a controversial call. Apparently the officiating staff from that game was suspended following a handful of missed calls. You know, sports and missed calls happen all the time, but from a fan standpoint, I can see how they would be upset over it because, you know, we've had many a calls over the last couple of weeks in sports that have determined the outcome of games. But they've got to do something with the officiating all across the board, honestly.
I'm with you there. And to your point, I think officiating in any sport, there's been some pretty horrendous calls. And you talk about, you know, missing calls. The end of the Giants-Saints game, I was listening to it on the radio on the drive home, and I was kind of confused about what happened. But to talk about referees possibly creating an outcome of the game was, what happens if they never review that punt at the end of that game? Perhaps the Saints had to throw a Hail Mary instead of kicking a field goal to win the game. And the same thing with the Miami-North Carolina game. Clearly, you know, I went back and watched the play. Maybe I've seen it a few times on TV, and I went back and watched it once. If the refs kept missing calls on that play, I can understand, because when there's laterals all over the field and you're trying to see where the football is, I can understand them missing somebody being down. But at the same time, with the horrendous calls, and I've seen this a lot in sports, including college football, there's been plenty of bad calls. I can see why they suspended these guys. So, you know, it's unfortunate that if the guy was down, that the game came out that way. But at the same time, you know, it's like you said, Richard, it goes back to the point of these refs making some pretty horrendous calls, and I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah, I didn't watch this game in question. Of course, I watched the return, as me and you talked about, Richard. But I didn't actually watch the whole game. I haven't seen the actual calls yet. But, I mean, obviously, if they're suspending them, there's a problem. The one thing I will say is in officiating, the refs definitely catch more grief than they deserve. They're unbelievably accurate across the board in most sports. If you look, I mean, the amount of calls that they get correct. And, you know, it's all live action to them. It's hard to get to see everything and see it, I mean, in as fast as pace as most professional sports are, and they're unbelievably accurate. But this seems to be on the extreme of that if they're missing a lot of calls or getting suspended, then there's a problem. But I don't think it's an overall theme in sports. It does happen, but as I said before, it's unbelievably accurate, most sports refs are.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I can take away from that was, you know, they were also talking about how they actually missed some calls that, you know, they were penalizing Miami for that shouldn't have been called to begin with. So, but that, you know, that's just happened. Like I said before, that just happens in sports. Quick NBA note, these Warriors guys, I think we discussed this in the previous weeks. Them boys are on a roll. 50-point win over Memphis. Curry dropped 30 on them, coming off a big night where he dropped, I think it was over 60 points or something like that on the Pelicans in the previous game. This looks like a repeated team. I can't explain it right now.
Yeah, Curry is just ridiculously good. I think he's, you know, a lot of people like to talk about before, I felt like it was always LeBron James and things of that nature. But I got to tell you, Curry is just, I think he's the best player in all of basketball right now. He's just lethal from and pretty much any point of the court, to be honest with you. And I really, really like his game, and I think they're going to repeat the champions this year. I mean, I know it's still early in the season, but, I mean, they just look st- stupid good right now, and it's and I'm happy to see it because I like Curry a lot. He seems like a really good father as well. I can always appreciate a family man winning a championship and being the focal point of the league instead of somebody that's a little bit, you know, like torn and tattered, you know, not a bad boy, but somebody perhaps that isn't a good person. But I like Steph Curry because he's a good guy, and I think he's a hell of a player. So hats off to him. He's incredible.
Yeah, right now Curry has 127 minutes. He scored 148 points. It's the most points scored through the first four games since Jordan in 1991.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a big name right there. I mean, he's playing lights out. You saw, like, the three that he drained, and I think it was the first game, and he turns away even before it splashes. He's playing, it's unbelievable. It's fun to watch. He's hitting from everywhere, as Peter said. I mean, it just seems like some nights that he just can't miss, and it's going to be fun watching him through the season and how long he can keep this like streak of scoring up.
Yeah, and it's like I said, I think one of the biggest analysts that they said from last year to beat the Warriors, you got to have perimeter defense, perimeter scoring. So we'll see if anybody in the Western Conference can, you know, answer the call. Moving on to the NFL, there was, you know, huge trade deadline came and passed. The only one that made any kind of move last night were the Broncos. The 49ers, they sent Vernon Davis over for a sixth-round pick and then swapped late-round picks for next year's draft. In terms of the trade, it was a good risk for Denver because they didn't really give up that much. Then on the other side, you're looking at Peyton, and, you know, a lot of people are saying that this is his last year. So it's basically John Elway is saying, well, we're going all in for a ring this year. But as a Patriots fan, I just have to wonder if they're, you know, they made that trade because they fear how good the Patriots offense is playing right now.
I'm with you there. I think Davis, number one, it's a low-risk trade because of what the Broncos gave up. It was pretty much nothing. If you really think about it, you know, low-round picks. So I think Vernon Davis, number one, is great for the Broncos offense because it adds a target, a big body target across the middle of the field. You know, obviously Peyton Manning, I think he's missing Julius Thomas, the former Broncos head, and I think that's one of the issues with the offense this year is missing him. That's obviously a huge blow to the offense. And I think what we saw the other was a Sunday night they played. The Broncos offense actually showed up and played pretty well. Peyton Manning did throw an interception, but the running game was going well. Peyton Manning was just making those throws when he had to. So if you had Vernon Davis to that mix, and if the Broncos can play as well as they did Sunday night on offense, and that's a big if because it was just one game they played well this year, just one, then this team is going to be pretty hard to beat. But I think some of it has to do with the Patriots, how they've been playing as well, because we all know Peyton Manning, his luck against Tom Brady has just been, it's never been great. He's beat Brady twice in the AFC Championship game. The first time with the Colts, they won the Super Bowl. The second time, they got blown out by the Seahawks. So I think in order for them to beat the Patriots or even the Bengals, who are looking phenomenal right now, they need a tight end to help move the chains and also as a third receiving weapon to help open up the run game as well. So it's a good move. It's high reward, low risk, I think, in my opinion, and the price that the Broncos had to get for him was pretty much robbery, in my opinion, highway robbery 101.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I thought this was a good move. I think Owen Daniels is a pretty good tight end, but definitely Vernon Davis is a plus. And plus, I mean, you can run two tight end sets with them and be highly effective. You can kind of have like a Hernandez Gronk thing going on. And there, the one thing I'm excited to see is we haven't gotten to see like real Vernon Davis in a while. You know, Vernon Davis with a good quarterback. We haven't got to see him, you know, play. I mean, we got to see him play with Kaepernick, but you know, I'm excited to see Vernon Davis get to play with Peyton Manning, and hopefully Peyton Manning continues to play like he did the other night more than he has at the start of the season. But it's going to be interesting how these two come together. It's always interesting in these midseason trades. You're kind of thrown into an offense you don't know. But I'm excited to see how Vernon Davis adapts to this offense and see how he plays, you know, with a real quarterback, and see his production increase.
The biggest question, and the biggest question I think from everyone is, what do the two have left in the tank? Because obviously Peyton Manning, you know, there's talk of him retiring next year, and you know, so you're only going to give Vernon Davis, what, 8 games? So this is either going to work or it's going to completely blow up in their face. But it like I think we all agreed on, it was a pretty good a risk for the Broncos to make. Not a lot else went on. There were a few rumors with the Patriots and Jason McCourty. I've been following my Twitter account all day hoping the Patriots would make a move. Nothing came up from anyone today. I mean, there was a few signings here and there that were just that were floating around on the waiver wire, but outside of that, nothing. The funniest part about the Jason McCourty thing is somebody created a fake Field Yates account and, you know, had Jason McCourty to the Patriots for a 4th and 6th round pick. It was so clever that it duped the Sports Hub up in Boston, and they reported off of that thing and then came back and said, oh, well, you know, we were fooled on that one as well. So it did make me look like a complete idiot when I shared it to everyone else. So Joe Thomas almost went from – I mean, they were saying the deal was almost close, so Joe Thomas almost went from Cleveland down to over to Denver, but apparently they ran out of time and there weren't enough they want to the reports were they wanted 2 first-round draft picks, and obviously they weren't going to get that. So I want to see in the next few days how close they were to actually making that deal.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Well, the rumor of Jason McCourty's New England, you know, that would have been pretty cool to see if he actually went to New England, because him and obviously his twin brother Devin are two of the best defensive backs in football. I mean, McCourty's just a fantastic safety for the Pats, but You know, unfortunately, around this time of the year, there's always going to be a fake account duping people. So that was kind of crazy. But the Browns wanting 2 first-round picks for Joe Thomas, it just goes to show you the ineptitude and the arrogance of general manager Ray Farmer, because I feel like Ray Farmer just hasn't done a very good job since he's taken over the Browns GM responsibilities. I feel like the guys he's drafted haven't, both from last year, Johnny Manziel and I'm forgetting the cornerback's name now. I believe they took him out of Oklahoma State. Just haven't really been, the maturity off the field and on the field has been questioned by many. Although apparently Manziel is going to be playing Thursday night as a starter, but it just goes to show you that the Browns don't know what they're doing. I think when it comes to trying to trade players, and I understand that they want first-round picks. I think one first-round pick and a third-round pick would have been a good asking price, because Thomas is an elite player in this league and probably will be a future Hall of Famer in his position. But I haven't heard any other rumors, but it's just concerning me that the Browns wanted this. And I think had the Broncos got him and Vernon Davis together, I think that would have made that team – even more better than it is now, 100%.
I'll start with the Jason McCourty thing here, and as a Titans fan, I am glad that he is still in Nashville. I heard that too, and it made me wonder how much of it was real because of his brother being there, Devin, how much of it was actually talked about and how close they actually were, or if it was just rumors and that was it. With the Joe Thomas thing, I heard a lot of people talking about this, so I think it has like a little bit more traction. I think it feels a little bit more real that they were getting close to something. And 2 first-round picks does seem like a lot. Joe Thomas has had an amazing career and will likely be a Hall of Famer at the end of his career. But you have to wonder how much left. The first thing that came to my mind, though, when I saw this was, what does this mean for Ryan Clady, the left tackle that they have, who is a very good left tackle, but, of course, is injured and out for this season? Were they looking to try to get Joe Thomas for a year and that's it, or were they trying to just move on from Ryan Clady? And so I was wondering what that meant for him. And I guess now that since the deal didn't go through, we'll never know for sure. But it's something to look forward to in this offseason. Are they trying to move away from Clady, move on to something else? Could that mean in the offseason that Clady could go somewhere else? It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, because I think Clady's had some injury issues as well the past couple years. So, I agree. I think that is an interesting note. Moving on, the Titans have fired head coach Ken Whisenhunt. And like we were just talking about the Titans and Jason McCourty, it was just after seven games this season, you know, and they drafted Marcus Mariota, and you give him seven games. What did they expect to accomplish in those seven games? Be first in their division with a rookie quarterback? What do you think, Ryan? I mean, you're the Titans fan. I kind of want to hear your insight first on this one.
This one was surprising. Ken Whisenhunt, I think, is a great offensive mind. I think that given the right pieces, he could do he can do a lot with it. I mean, you saw his years in San Diego and how well that offense ran under him, and also his years in Pittsburgh. He's proven talent. He has had a terrible stint in Tennessee, though. And, you know, in 23 games, he's 3-20. That's not very good at all. But, you know, he's got the coach for a year and a half, and they give him the axe. I just think that I think it's fan pressure. I think it comes from the social media age we live in now, where the fans are calling for this guy's job just because it's not instant success. But you're not going to have instant success. That's not the kind of league this is. That's not how it works. You know, it's not like, and I think everybody will I know that everybody's thinking right now, like, oh, Dan Campbell. Yeah, Dan Campbell beat two garbage AFC South teams and then got dismantled by Tom Brady when he played a real team. So it's not instant success. You're not going to have that. I think this is a very premature move. I think that Whisenhunt should have been given time to try to get his players into the system and get Mariota comfortable in this system. And, like, all you're doing now is you're basically throwing this season out and we're going to start from scratch in the off season. I thought it was a surprising move, definitely premature, and I think it's definitely fan-driven. I think this is coming from people, from fans of the team, pushing for it. And I don't know how many petitions I saw that said, you know, come sign this to, if you think that he should be fired, that Whisenhunt should lose his job. In the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, you've seen a bunch of them. I think the fan pressure, I thought it was very premature.
It was very premature. You're only 23 games into your coaching career and you get fired. I think, well, a number of things. One, like you said, there's no instant success in this league. And Whisenhunt inherited a team that had a lot of issues. One of them, I think, Jake Locker retired before last season started, right? That was before the 2014 season he quit?
Yes.
Okay, so you lose your first-round quarterback, and I think Jake Locker wasn't as bad as maybe some people thought he was. He was just banged up and didn't have a lot of weapons around him. But the Ken Whisenhunt after 23 games with a rookie quarterback, who I think Marcus Mariota is very talented, was a horrible decision. And, you know, I understand he's a great offensive mind. It made me sound like a great team builder. But at some point, you have to just go with the ride. They should have gave him this year and next year to see what he could have done. And after his third year, say, okay, we're going to give you one more year, and if you don't have a winning record, we're going to get rid of you. But this, I mean, I don't understand why this move was made. I really like Ken Whisenhunt, and he'll find a job once the season's over, either as an offensive coordinator somewhere or a head coach. But for this to happen, especially with the rookie quarterback, is just, I think it's a shame, really, and I think it was a very, very bad move by the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what they do next year with a coaching job. Mike Mularkey fills in, so we can't really talk about him because, you know, he's had a few defensive offensive coordinator positions. I was going to touch base on Tony Romo, but I'm going to wait till we go over the games. The 49ers benching a Colin Kaepernick today. But that came off as a little bit of a surprise. But then again, when they traded Vernon Davis, You know, apparently, I think somebody told, I think it was you, or I think it was you, Peter, that said it was 44 players. Or somebody, one of you told me it was 44 players that petitioned, hey, we don't want him, we want Blaine Gabbert in.
I mean, if that's true, that's bad. And I think I heard somewhere online today a rumor that Colin Kaepernick has given up on the 49ers. And then I think somebody actually posted in the First Out Fantasy group that, from Bleacher Report, that allegedly the 49ers were waiting until they played the Atlanta Falcons, supposedly top defense, to play Blaine Gabbert. And if that's true, this team is in complete disarray. And when I saw Vernon Davis was traded, I had a feeling that Kaepernick was going to get benched, because you don't trade away one of your best players despite his lack of productivity. But to go back to Ryan's point, it's really about who's throwing him the football. But again, the quarterback aside, because the quarterback situation on that team is just a disaster. But this, to me, speaks volumes about what's going on this team. Number one, firing Harbaugh was a huge mistake, because if this happened, if Harbaugh was still here, this whole thing would have never happened, because Harbaugh would have made the decision probably earlier before the season on who to start. But Kaepernick hasn't looked good at all this year. I agree, but to put him Blaine Gabbert, Blaine Gabbert is just awful. I'm sorry, you know, I think, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but to go from Kaepernick, who's almost won the Super Bowl and was just outside of going to another one the year after, to Blaine Gabbert speaks volumes about how Kaepernick just fell as a player with his productivity. But also shows you just how awful the 49ers organization is since J.D. worked out to the bottom. How do you allow this to happen is beyond me. And I think Colin Kaepernick has played his last game as a 49er, and I think that's unfortunate, because I think you ruined him last year with some of their schemes. But if Harbaugh was here, this wouldn't have happened, and that's on J.D. York. And the players like Michael Crabtree, who are soft, who went and cried to Deion Sanders about Harbaugh, who was the one who ran his mouth. And yes, I said ran his mouth, because Deion Sanders had no business opening his mouth about Harbaugh. The 49ers are a joke, and Colin Kaepernick's benching is just another sideshow in the circus. That is the 49ers. They're pathetic.
Yeah, to me, this is like having a beat-up old car, and, you know, you don't like it, you don't like the way it runs, so you just push it into the lake and just decide to walk places instead. Like, yeah, Kaepernick's not going to set the world on fire. He's not an elite-level quarterback by any means, but he is definitely better than Blaine Gabbert. This move doesn't make sense to me. Blaine Gabbert, since he's been in this league, has been awful. Go look at his starts. He overthrows the ball. He does not read defenses. This is a guy that needs to drop back and just three steps and pass the ball to the left, pass the ball to the right. He's not going to read defenses. The whole petition thing just calls into question, like, the entire locker room. It makes you wonder about, first, Colin Kaepernick and what he's done to push his whole team away, because it does sound like there's more than just his bad play. It makes you wonder about Jim Tomsula and the kind of presence that he has in that locker room. It makes you wonder about the front office. Like, it just seems that this whole organization, from top to bottom, is just a dumpster fire. And I completely agree with what Peter said. It is awful. This whole organization is awful. And you're just watching them just spiral out of control. And it's sad to see from an organization that used to be so high in this league. I mean, you look at the 80s. This was the team of the 80s and early 90s. I mean, you look, they were just – and now to see them so low. I mean, the whole organization is just complete disarray.
Yeah, and I think I want to – add on one thing about the whole Blaine Gabbert. I think I read somewhere he's only had 5 wins in his entire career. So that's going to be an interesting franchise to watch for the next couple of years to see what they do there, because, yeah, I'm with you guys. It's complete. They've completely ruined the 49er name. This was the issue that Peter wanted to talk about, was the Jets quarterback situation. Geno Smith came in. He didn't play great, but he didn't play as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick, who now they think has torn ligaments in his thumb. This does not look good moving forward at all.
This is really bad. I think without Ryan Fitzpatrick, this team is headed for some dark waters. And it's also I know Geno Smith got banged up during the game too. And if they had to start Bryce Petty, I really feel bad for him. Because I like Bryce Petty a lot, and I think he's a couple years away from being a starter in this league because obviously with him coming out of that system in college, he needs to learn the NFL ways. But I wasn't expecting Bryce Petty to even start until probably somewhere between week 15 and 17 when perhaps the Jets might be out of playoff hope. But when they started 4-2, I thought to myself, you know, hey, these aren't that bad. But then the way they lost it to Oakland, but give Oakland credit, they are good. I'm really concerned about the Jets quarterback situation right now because I like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I've been hard on him over the years, but the reason why I like him is because he goes out there and he gets it as all every game, and he's played for some pretty awful teams. I think, honestly, the Jets team is probably the most talented team he's ever been on offensively and defensively, but man, I tell you, the Jets quarterback situation just isn't good. They didn't make a trade before the deadline, which shocks me. I thought that they might go for Kaepernick or perhaps RG3. They didn't go for either one of those guys. I really don't know who's out there as far as veteran quarterbacks go. Vinny Testaverde was a go-to guy all the time, but obviously he's beyond retired at this point. But with the Jets, you never know. They might actually call Vinny Testaverde out of retirement to ask him to play a couple games. But I mean, just honestly, this team is just too talented to have these issues. And, you know, listen, Geno Smith is just, I don't like him as a quarterback or as a leader, because clearly to get in the face of somebody and get punched in the face, while that's not an excuse to get punched in the face, but if he was really getting in the face of that guy, pointing his finger, which was allegedly what happened, I question his leadership, and I also question him as a quarterback, because if you've watched him, it's always the last couple games of the season that he plays well. Not when it matters, you know, sometimes at the end of the season it's one that matters, but if you stink up the whole joint and then wait to the last couple games to play well, I just can't. I can't respect that as a quarterback, because that's something the Jets have always had. They'll stink, and then the last couple games they seemingly play well. So if Patrick goes down, Geno Smith isn't healthy, I'm worried for Bryce Petty, because I think Bryce Petty shouldn't even be playing right now in this league. He should be sitting on the bench and learning. So, I don't know. I just don't know what to think right now about this mess of a situation. But, you know, it's anything to happen. Maybe they pick up somebody free agency. Maybe Kaepernick gets cut because of what's going on in San Francisco and they pick him up for a cheap price. But right now, the Jets quarterback situation is horrible, and I feel bad for the players on the team because they were playing great football up until they played the Patriots and got pretty much embarrassed at the end, and they got blown out by the Raiders. So that's all I have to say about their quarterback situation. They need to figure something out, because Geno Smith isn't the answer, and Fitzpatrick was playing a hell of a lot better than Geno Smith has ever played in a Jets uniform, period.
I agree with on the Ryan Fitzpatrick side of it. It's sad to see him go down. Especially, he's been playing so well this season on this team. He's really, really had like a breakout year. He just looks so good under center out there. Really pushing that team, and they've had a great season up until this point with him. And then he goes down with the injury. Then you have Geno come in. At the end of last season, last couple of games, you kind of touched on this. Geno looked pretty good in the last couple of games. He strung together something like 170 passes without an interception. You know, he started to look pretty good. And you're in the offseason, and I'm a West Virginia fan, so I like Geno. So in the offseason, I'm thinking, all right, all Geno's got to do is, you know, this is his year. He's got to come out, he's got to play. He knows that. He's got to come out. He's got to play well if he wants this job. So, you know, in the preseason, he gets in a fight with a linebacker over money that he owes him. I mean, I don't know if Geno Smith's aware that he's getting paid millions of dollars by the Jets. But he owes, you know, he's got like $1,100, who's a sixth-round pick. He makes like a fraction of what Geno makes. So that happens. He gets his jaw broke, and then and comes back. Finally, he's getting back into things. Gets another shot to come out. And then you watch him try to run headlong over a linebacker instead of taking, like, the slide when he already clearly has the first down, which is just bad decision-making on the field and off the field. So Geno's, you know, shaken up now. Then, like, it just shows bad decision making for Geno Smith on and off the field. I like Geno. I want to see him do well, but he's just, as soon as he puts himself into a good position, as soon as he gets into a good spot, he works himself out of it. And he has no one but to blame but himself. As far as Bryce Petty goes, I like Bryce Petty. He's got a good arm. He's got decent mechanics. The thing is Bryce Petty doesn't know how to play the NFL game from the shoulders up. Bryce Petty is exactly what you want if you're building the frame of the QB, but he doesn't have that NFL mind that you're looking for. And Peter said it exactly right. This guy's not a guy that you want on the field for your team for, you know, a couple years. He still needs those 3-4 years to get up the pace on how you play at the NFL level. You saw in college, he's got the skills. He's got the big arm. He's accurate. But he doesn't know how to read NFL defenses. So if they're starting him, they're going to be in bad shape. And I think it also puts a black mark on Bryce Petty because he's not going to play well because, as I said, you know, not knowing the NFL game. This is a really bad situation the Jets have got them in, which is sad to say, as well as they've played this year. And it is surprising they didn't go after anybody. And I thought they might try to, and I've heard Mallett's name being brought up now with the injuries and stuff, that they might try to bring Ryan Mallett in, which just seems like you want more headaches in your locker room at this point. Have him and Geno pouting on the sideline together. So I just think that they just need to try to work to get Fitz back, and like I just don't know what they're expecting. Starting Bryce Petty seems like a bad idea. They need to get a hold of Geno Smith and shake some sense into him. But the worst part of this is watching Ryan Fitzpatrick go down and what was a really good season for him.
Yeah, it was. Quick side note, somebody, I can't remember who said it, said if you were to sign Ryan Mallett, you might as well give him an alarm clock as a sign-on bonus. starting the week ahead, week 8 is in the books. We're going to open it up, Chiefs 45, Lions 10. The Lions are in a complete disarray. I think Caldwell is now blaming the Detroit media for the Lions' woes. That's hilarious. You're an offensive coordinator. You ran a playbook for many, many years. You were calling plays in Baltimore. You called plays in Indy. You even were calling plays in Indy when you were promoted the head coaching gig. So you should still be calling the plays now instead of firing your entire coaching staff. Biggest note on for me was the ankle injury to Megatron. I don't know if he's day-to-day, doubtful or whatnot. And the rise of Chandler Quest, 97 yards and a touchdown.
Man, so over the weekend I was in the Grand Canyon, but I caught this game at the hotel because I was pretty worn out and tired from the day before of hiking and just driving in general. But to get back to the point, I watched the game and I just felt like the Lions are just so inept. And it's sad to watch Matthew Stafford get beat up behind that pitiful offensive line. That's probably the nicest thing I can say about that offensive line is that they are pitiful. There's a lot of other words I could probably use to describe them, including garbage and trash, which they also are as well. But it's just, it's horrific. And I think it's sad to watch the Lions crumble like this. But on the flip side, what I took away from the Chiefs was that, I mean, you know, granted the Lions aren't the best, but the Chiefs really, really played well. I thought Alex Smith played a very great quarterback in that game. He also ran the ball well himself. That touchdown strike to Macklin, I mean, he just threaded that thing in there. He threw that thing pretty hard into Jeremy Macklin as well. And I think this win is a good step forward for the Chiefs because I still think the Chiefs are, you know, I don't know how I feel about them without Jamal Charles, but I think this team is learning how to play without having to throw checkdowns to Jamal Charles and hand it off all the time. And I think it's a good step forward for this team heading into next year because if Jamal Charles comes back next year healthy and the Chiefs can gain confidence without having him in the backfield, I think watch out for the Chiefs next year. Not this year, but next year I think they'll be a lot better because Alex Smith, he's shown some growth this week to me that I haven't seen him play that well since that playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts a couple of years ago.
I agree exactly with what you were saying about Alex Smith on that side of the ball. I think he needed to be in a situation where he had a little bit of more pressure on him. I think that Jamaal Charles going down was actually good for him. And after Jamaal Charles went down, I almost wrote this team off. I thought they were going to be done, but I mean, now they're playing good. You know, this is what, their second win in a row now. I mean, they're playing good football. As for Detroit, I mean, this is a team that has so many weapons. And it's just sad to see that, like, this team is just, like, just plays so poorly. You know, they lost, like, everybody, it seemed like, on the – they lost their entire defensive line over the offseason, pretty much. And then – so they don't have that to rely on anymore. The offense is just, like, awful. And as Peter said, the trash defensive line, which is even probably still being too nice. And now you heard all these rumors about, oh, they might get rid of Stafford, and, oh, they might get rid of Megatron and try to trade and stuff. I mean, this is another team that seems they're starting to get to that. They're not quite at San Francisco level, but they're heading that direction. I mean, they're playing awful football. The coach going out and blaming the media. It's the media's fault that he can't do his job right. It's just unbelievable at this point that this team is where they are right now, especially considering this was an 11-5 team last year. This team pressured the Green Bay Packers and almost took that number one spot in that division last year. I mean, they were one game behind the Packers, and now to see them the worst team in football right now, I mean, as far as record goes, I mean, it's pitiful to see the Lions fall like this. It's awful, and I think Caldwell's going to be the next guy that we see go.
Yeah, I agree there, because I think Manning was not very happy playing with him as his head coach. And I went on record many a times how I completely disagreed with the Jim Caldwell hire to begin with. It's just like, you can't put somebody who's just an offensive mind to, you know, got fired as a head coach once before, went to a team with a great defense in the Ravens and was running the playbook there for a few years, and they expect him to come in and take over a franchise all over again. He what did they win? Two games with Curtis Painter. I mean, and you got Matthew Stafford and Megatron, and now you're winning one game. It just doesn't make sense. Bucks 23, Falcons 20. My little short note, we talked Sunday morning about the Falcons and the turnover issue a bit. And, you know, Matt Ryan, I think, fumbled a snap. He threw two picks. So, I mean, it was a rough day. This offense is really, really struggling, and it showed. And, you know, but I think the huge day was Julio Jones, 162 yards and a touchdown. But it's like I said, Devontae Freeman had an okay day, not as explosive as what we've seen in the years past. But I'm going to give my hat off to, you know, I'm going to tip my hat here to Winston. Still didn't turn the football over once, or, you know, he didn't throw an interception. So, you know, when you can't turn the football over that many times, expect to win a close ball game. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it was disappointing to see them lose, and a home game as well to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's sad. I don't know what's going on with Atlanta. You know, when they started, what was it? I believe it was 5-0. I thought they were pretty good, but after a couple of losses, maybe it wasn't 5-0. I apologize, but I know Atlanta started pretty well, but you almost have to question their start, because they easily could have lost more games at the beginning of the season. They could have lost at the Eagles against the Eagles and against the Giants. So realistically, maybe the way they started was a little bit, you know, you look at a team's record and you think to yourself, oh, they're playing great, but just because the team is undefeated or has a good amount of wins doesn't mean that they're a bad team. You know, some of those teams have their flaws, and I think Atlanta's flaw is that their defense can be suspect at times, and Matt Ryan was hit or miss. His mechanics, I'm not sure I feel about his footwork, which he's even alluded to. And to lose to Jameis Winston at home is just, I'm just amazed. I mean, Jameis Winston has been either okay or just atrocious this year. So to me, it just shows you the Atlanta Falcons are still struggling to be a really quality team. And this is something that we've heard in the media for years, is that Matt Ryan, he's fantastic, but they just can't seem to get over that hump. And they could have really won that NFC Championship game a couple of years ago against the 49ers, but they blew that one too. And I just think the Falcons don't know how to finish a ball game at times, or even with a great start to a season, know how to finish off the season correctly, even with half the season left to go.
For this game, I definitely think this shows you more. It tells you more about the Atlanta Falcons than it does the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hats off to the Buccaneers. It's always nice to win in this league. I think it shows you more about the Falcons. As you were saying, Peter, they did go 5-0 to start the season, and then they lose to the Saints 31-21 in that game that really made you think the Saints were back, and after they were the way they've been playing, and, you know, we'll go to that game later. I mean, they do look like they're starting to get into their groove back. But since starting 5-0, they lose to the Saints. They barely beat the Titans 10-7, and then they come into this game and lose in overtime. I mean, you're facing the two teams that drafted first and second last year. You barely beat one, and then you lose in overtime to the other. That's not a good sign that your team's moving in the right direction. And if you look at the beginning of their schedule, there's really no teams that stand out. As you said, the Eagles, who have been playing sloppy football, the Giants, who play sloppy football, the Cowboys without Romo and Dez Bryant, the Texans, who are an awful team, and then the Redskins, who almost won that game. If you remember, that was another one that was real close that they almost lost to a Redskins team that's about middle of the road. I think this team is struggling. I think they're going to continue to struggle down the stretch. They play San Francisco next week, so I think they'll get a win there. But after that, you know, they're going to play some tough teams. I think they're going to lose a lot in their division, as we've seen so far. I mean, every good division game that they've played so far, they've lost. And they haven't even played the toughest team in their division yet. So I think this Atlanta team's going to continue to struggle this year. And they might not, after starting 5-0, they might miss the playoffs.
That's rough, too, especially with the Saints and the Panthers continuing to, because like I said, the Saints just got red hot. And like you said, we're about three games away from that one. Cards 34, Browns 20. McCown, you know, we just talked about the quarterback issues. He's hurt yet again. The reports are he can't sleep very well or breathe very well because of the rib issue and the shoulder. So we'll see how that goes. They're listening to me day to day, but they're preparing for, boy, oh boy, Johnny Manziel. you know, and he threw some nice balls in the game against the Jets earlier in the year, but you can't roll Johnny Manziel out there with the red-hot Cardinals offense. I think when I looked at this game, it was, you know, Carson Palmer, Malcolm Floyd, or whatever his name is, and Chris Johnson, monster numbers. And, you know, the Browns are in trouble when the team at the trade deadline says, you know, that there was a report saying, you know, not only Alex Mack and Joe Thomas and the Mingo or whatever, Barcavius Mingo are available. They said, we're open to trading anybody right now. So that just tells me that this team is going to continue the decline and they're looking to rebuild and rebuild in a hurry.
Yeah, the Browns are just... It's another just awful season for them in terms of winning and losing games record-wise. But I think McCown has done a pretty good job of playing with the players he has around him. But I think it's unfair that they leave him out there injured. I feel like every week we're hearing about him having some sort of soreness or tightness or some sort of banged-up injury, and they keep throwing him out there to the Wolves. And, you know, McCown... He's done a lot of good things as a journeyman in this league. Probably the best year he ever had was with the Bears a couple of years ago. I'm just concerned about this team as a whole. You know, you know, as I said before, Ray Farmer is just he's a pathetic general manager. But I think at the end of the day, what this game really comes down to is the Cardinals are just fantastic. I mean, Michael Floyd is just really starting to show up in this offense. Carson Palmer is just he's just looked amazing this year. And Chris Johnson looks like the Chris Johnson of old. It's just this team is very talented. I think the Cardinals have a really, really good shot of maybe winning the Super Bowl this year or just making it. But as far as the Browns go, CMO Cleveland Browns, and they're just in complete disarray. And that's all I got to say about that.
I feel the exact same way about Josh McCown as I do Ryan Fitzpatrick. This is a guy that has come out, and he has had a pretty good season so far. He's kept them in a lot of games that they had no business being in. I mean, they lost to the Raiders by 3, the Chargers by 3, and the Broncos by 3. I mean, the Chargers haven't been playing well, but the Raiders have been playing really good. The Broncos, as we can see, one of the best teams in the entire league. You know, the record at 2-6 is, it doesn't tell the full story of this Browns team. It's rough to see McCown going because they're a completely different team with Manziel in there. I don't think they'll do well at all. I don't think they'll be able to win games and pull it off with Manziel in there against most NFL teams. And McCown added a spark to this team, definitely. On the other side of the ball, this Cardinals team, I mean, they do look fantastic. They've been playing well. You know, Palmer's having his second half of his career just came alive there. Chris Johnson's revitalized his career in Arizona. Larry Fitzgerald looks like he's 22 years old out there catching balls. I mean, this is like the island of misfit toys in the NFL coming together in Arizona, and they're playing outstanding. This is one of the best teams in the NFC. I think at the beginning of the season, I picked them to win that division over the Seahawks, and I'm so glad I did at this point in the season. They look like a far better team than that Seattle team. The one thing that I didn't like about this team was this week, Chris Johnson with 2 fumbles. When you start having those kind of issues, you're especially with the backs that they have, you're going to see, you know, you're going to start seeing David Johnson get more carries. You're going to start seeing Andre Ellington work his way back into the lineup when you start having games like that. He did a rush for over 100 yards. He looked good for most of the game. But the 2 fumbles, not a huge issue yet, but if that kind of play continues, you know, against the Browns, you'll still be able to win that game. You have 2 fumbles against, you know, their division rival in Seattle or a team at, like, that level or higher, they're probably not going to win that game. So something to look forward to, like, going forward is the fumbling issue. But this team, I mean, they're playing great football, and I think they can make a deep playoff run, as Peter touched on.
Yeah, I think they can, too. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about the Rams-49ers game because the outcome was just about, you know, what everybody expected. Rams 27, 49ers 6. I think we talked about the big name here was Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley continues to look like he's going to be the offensive rookie of the year. 20 carries, 133 yards and a touchdown. We can go on to the Vernon Davis trade and, you know, the benching of Colin Kaepernick, but we covered all that. I think, like I said, I think the biggest one here was that Todd Gurley's just on a roll and he's going to continue to do so.
Todd Gurley is just, he's fantastic. I think he could possibly end up winning Rookie of the Year, him or Amari Cooper. But the takeaways from this game was obviously the 49ers are in disarray, but Todd Gurley is fantastic. Tavon Austin is finally starting to show up as a legitimate wide receiver in this league, and I think Nick Foles is getting the job done well enough on offense to help win the team games. And defensively, the Rams are fantastic, so I think the Rams are going to be, if they make the playoffs, watch out for them. They might be able to make a really good push towards the Super Bowl as long as they can keep rolling as they are right now.
I'm going to be the third one to say it here. Todd Gurley's awesome. The kid's been playing fantastic. Like, what's the over-under? When does Todd Gurley rush for less than 100 yards? Is it next season? 5 years in the league? Like, when is it? Like, this kid's brilliant. He's fun to watch. He's been playing outstanding. breaking big runs, making guys miss. He's fast. He's big physical back. He's fun. He's fun to watch. He's one of the best young running backs we've seen in, I mean, years. And it's crazy to think that he misses, you know, a big chunk of the schedule. And he's, and you know, in the talks for Rookie of the Year, probably the front runner at this point for Rookie of the Year in the NFL. I love this St. Louis team. You know, they're not like a top elite level team, but they're a gritty football team. They play an old style of football. They like to run the ball and let their defense win the games for them. I like that. I like watching teams play like that. They remind me a lot of Minnesota, and they're fun to watch. And, of course, you know, San Francisco, we touched on that. But, yeah, Todd Gurley's just – he's unreal to watch. He's fun.
Yeah, and that, like I said, I think we're all in pretty much agreement. So he's probably going to win overall Rookie of the Year. Saints 52, Giants 49. Eli and Breeze threw a combined 13 touchdown passes. I believe that broke an NFL record. If you're watching this game, shootouts are always fun. But let's be honest for a minute. The defense really stunk. And for the Saints, winners of three straight, it looks like they're relevant again. That makes that NFC South, you know, a little bit more interesting with the fall of the Falcons and the rise of the Saints. And you got the Panthers sitting right there undefeated. So we all thought that it was going to be, you know, it was pretty much going to be a tight race, I think.
Right, yeah, I'm with you on the tight race part. so that's what I got to say about that. What do you have to say, Ryan?
Yeah, on the Saints side of the ball, I mean, if you look at their schedule, they had like a rough start. They played the Cardinals, lost a head scratcher to Tampa Bay, but then lost one to the Panthers, who are obviously a good team. But they've won four out of the last five games. Like, they're really starting to come alive here. And they don't have that hard of a schedule coming up in front of them. I think this is a team that could make, could make a run towards the playoffs. But it's all dependent on, it's completely dependent on Drew Brees. As we saw in this game, that defense is not going to beat people by themselves. So it's completely up to the way that Drew Brees plays. You know, you throw seven touchdown passes, you're probably not going to get beat. So it's completely up to him. On the other side of the ball, speaking of tight races, this NFC East, I mean, it's just pitiful. It's awful to watch. The Cowboys, I think, are starting like four people that they had at the beginning of the season starting with how many injuries that they've had. The Philadelphia Eagles are running Chip Kelly's failed science experiment. And then the Redskins are actually starting to, like, started off cold and then starting to look hot, you know, last week. So, you know, the Giants had a chance to push themselves out in front here. And it's rough that you go out and, as a Giants fan, Giants fans out there, watch your quarterback throw six touchdown passes and lose a game.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
But that secondary is awful in New York. It is atrocious how bad that secondary is. And they're going to continue to have problems. And the way that this division's working out, you know, Dallas might still win the NFC East after losing their quarterback for the whole season, because none of these teams are gaining anywhere. They're not pushing away, you know. They're still, like, I think Dallas right now is like two games away from first place. So it's going to be interesting.
Like third or fourth, yeah.
It's going to be interesting heading into like the end of the season when like Romo comes back and who can get the division in the NFC East. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, NFC East has just been laughable this year, and as far as the defense is going, this game just inexcusable poor defense. But man, Drew Brees with seven touchdowns, that's just incredible. And I think there's still a lot of people out there were questioning his ability to play in this league still and on the league level. So I think he silenced his critics, and he looked amazing on Sunday.
Yeah, I think he silenced me as well. Ravens 29, Vikings 23, Bears 20. Bears seem to be on a losing, or they seem to be losing valuable ground in this division. Although it does not, it does kind of help a little bit that the Packers did lose. They're running out of time, you know, but the biggest thing for the Bears is they got Alshon Jeffrey back this week. 10 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. Adrian Peterson had another great day, and I think, Ryan, the name that you mentioned on Sunday's show was Stephon Diggs. I believe he had another monster day as well.
Yeah, it's the Bears. I think Jay Cutler actually looks pretty good this year despite his team's record. But, again, the Bears are just they're a mess, and I think John Fox inherited a mess. And I think it's going to be another year or two before he can really right this ship in the division with the Vikings and Packers ahead of them, the Lions. As we've already touched upon, or, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with the Lions, but I think the Vikings are they're continuing to grow. I think Teddy Bridgewater has done a pretty good job despite not perhaps having the best wide receivers in the league. But with Adrian Peterson behind him, I think it helps them tremendously. But as far as the Bears go, I think Jay Cutler, like I said, he's shown some improvement this year. Some late wins against the Chiefs and the Raiders has really sparked my interest in Jay Cutler again. But realistically, I mean, the Vikings, they've been up and down the season, and the Bears have just been pretty bad. So that's all I've got to say about this. So that's it. I think Adrian Peterson is going to continue to be the focal point of the Vikings offense. Otherwise, they wouldn't be that good. And the Bears, just their defense and outside of Jay Cutler and outside of Jeffrey Naforte, just aren't that good.
Yeah, this game was fun to watch. It's interesting. A good battle. For the Bears, I like the way the Bears are heading. I like what John Fox is doing with the Bears. He's building this team up. Peter said, Jay Cutler looked improved, and having Alshon Jeffrey back, it definitely is only going to help him even more. And I think this Bears team, they're a couple years away, but I think that Cutler's showing you now that, you know, he can be that piece. He can be, you know, the quarterback in Chicago for the time being. And I like the way that they're building this team, and I think that John Fox is going to build a good team there, and I'm excited to see what he does moving forward. On the other side of the ball, Minnesota's been playing great. Adrian Peterson, another good day. Stephon Diggs is making me look like a fantasy genius. love watching him play. Very exciting player to watch, and he's provided a big spark for this offense. The one thing, though, that one of the big things about this Minnesota team, though, is I don't think they are nearly as good as their record implies. You know, they've only played one team so far that's above 500, and they lost to that team.
That was Denver.
Yeah, Denver. The rest of their season, they play one team that's below 500, and that's when they play the Bears again. So this team is going to have a far harder road ahead of them than they have behind them. It's something like the winning percentage was like the teams that they played already is something like, I think it was 33% of their games that they've played they've won. The teams ahead of them, it's like 67%. So it's going to be a whole different ball game for them than the games coming up. And they might struggle. This team that's sitting in a pretty spot right now might struggle to make the playoffs if they can't get wins over big teams. They still have to play the Packers twice this season, you know, as you know. And it's going to be a hard road for them to get down. So I want to see what this team has, because they've gotten off with a light schedule so far. So I want to see if they can push past the hard part of the schedule and make it to the playoffs for the rest of this year.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big thing with them. Ravens 29, Chargers 26. I've been saying it all year. Phillip Rivers is playing great. They're just not winning football games. Like I said, Ravens get the win. They were playing the Chargers. And, you know, I can't put my finger on what's going on here. I've got a few Chargers fans that, you know, tend to believe that it's a bad GM and he's just not making the proper moves. Because, like I said, Phillip like I said, Phillip Rivers having an okay season. So, I mean, anybody want to take a stab at what's wrong with the Chargers?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with San Diego. I think the McCoy era is pretty much over now there. Phillip Rivers has been playing some fantastic football, but I'm not a big fan of the running game or the defense in San Diego, and I think it's time for McCoy to go and then for them to head in a brand new direction and get Phillip Rivers the help he deserves because, you know, he's never made the Super Bowl. He's come close, but in all reality, I think it's just the way this team is built isn't good. And Phillip Rivers, who threw 500-some yards on the Packers and ended up losing, I mean, that never happens. And I think it speaks volumes about the team's shortcomings on both sides of the football.
Yeah, this game was like a head-scratcher versus a head-scratcher. We don't know why the Ravens did lose some pieces, but no one expected them to play as bad as they have been. The Chargers, they're another team that you just didn't expect to play this bad. And as you said, Rivers has been, on a fantasy's perspective, Rivers is awesome. He's been playing lights out, really, really high-level football, but they still can't seem to get a win. This defense is not playing well. The running game is not there to support. Part of the fact that he's playing so well and his numbers are so good, I think, has to do with the fact that they're always behind. It's hard to say with this team. I think Rivers is having to do too much. I think they're putting the ball in his hand and telling him, you know, you have to go win this game by yourself. And, I don't know. There might be one, maybe two quarterbacks in the league that can do that at this point, can win a game by themselves. Rivers is not one of those quarterbacks. So it's sad to see him play so well and the team not, like, show up behind him. But I think that's just what's going on. He's not getting any help in San Diego.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do from here on out. Got about 20 minutes, so we're going to run through these games as quick as we can. There's about four games left. Bengals 16, Steelers 10. Dalton and Ben played pretty bad in terms of stats, but A.J. Green did have a huge game. I think Mike Nugent, 3-for-4 on field goals, won this one for them. The Steelers lost Le'Veon Bell for the year on a torn MCL. So, you know, that's not looking good for them. Although D'Angelo Williams has played pretty good in his place, so we'll see how they look them in the coming weeks.
As far as, I liked Andy Dalton a lot, but with the Steelers losing Bell, it's going to be tough. And I hope D'Angelo Williams can be good enough to help this team win, but that's a blow for the Steelers. And as far as the Bengals, this goes to show you that the Bengals can win any sort of game. They beat up the teams pretty bad this year. They've also had – this was a close to them in the division. So I think the Bengals – I think they're for real. But until they play a prime time game, I think that's when we're going to have to wait and make our decision about the Bengals. Then when they play, you know, a Sunday or Monday night game or Thursday night game like they are this week, because that's usually when they show us who they really are. But – as far as Pittsburgh goes, it stinks that Big Ben came back and that Bell went down, but I think the Steelers will be fine enough because outside of them and the Bengals, the division is a complete joke.
I agree. I was going to say the exact same thing that Peter said. This shows that the Bengals can win a game in any kind of fashion. I think this team is definitely for real. They've been playing really good. They got a lot of weapons on that offense, and they have a really solid defense, and they've been playing great. On the other side of the ball, everybody was excited to see Big Ben come back, and then they lose their star running back. It's going to hurt any time you lose a player of his caliber, Le'Veon Bell. But this offense has a lot of weapons. You know, Antonio Brown might be the best wide receiver in the game. Martavius Bryant is a great second option. Heath Miller's a really solid tight end. And then D'Angelo Williams is no slouch, and he played great for Bell in the first two games when Bell was out. So, you know, it's always going to hurt when you lose a player that's that good. But they have enough talent outside of Bell that they can still have a really high potent offense.
Yeah, and that's going to be the interesting thing, because I think you're looking at Big Ben's not really 100% healthy yet either. So the Steelers are an interesting story. And going back on the wait until they get to prime time, the Bengals-Cardinals game in 2 weeks has been flexed to Sunday Night Football. So we're going to see what the Bengals are about once the spotlight's on them. Texans 20, Titans 6. Brian Hoyer's 2 TD passes looks like the difference maker. Really wasn't a lot going on. Titans need to find some answers on offense. I guess firing Woods and Hunt and then, you know, promoting the offensive coordinator or whatever, and now he's talking about he's going to do something with the scheming to help develop Mariota. Why didn't Ken Woods and Hunt do that? We talked about that earlier. But I think, you know, Zach Mettenberger is not the answer. You need to get Mariota back, and you need to get him back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it's unfortunate that that Mariota went down. But I think it's good that they got Mettenberger in there just to kind of see if he was good enough to trade perhaps next season for some picks to a team that needs a quarterback. But I'm just not that impressed with Mettenberger. And Brian Hoyer, he continues the up-and-down ride for the Houston Texans, but that win helped keep them within striking distance of first place and in a pretty pitiful division. I think Hoyer is definitely the answer over Ryan Mallett, who was cut because Ryan Mallett has maturity issues, and his excuses for missing practice and the team flight are just pathetic. But I think Houston, they needed this win big time, and I think that Houston still might have a shot to win this division, just how bad the Colts have been playing this whole season.
Yeah, I'm a Tennessee fan, and this is definitely, though, the worst division in football. The AFC South has to be. I mean, there's no good teams really right now. I mean, the Colts, probably the best team, is still not playing good at all right now. Takeaways from this game for me was it was a lot closer than the score implied, the 20-6. Both teams struggled. Both defenses played pretty well. Both touchdowns came on long passes from Hoyer, one to Nate Washington, and one to DeAndre Hopkins, where the wide receivers really made great plays to get to the football. I think both passes were wide receivers making great plays. And Brian Hoyer just putting the ball up there for them to get it. And that was the difference in this. It was two plays. Tennessee could not get anything done on offense. They gave up 7 sacks in this game. Mettenberger did not play well, but he have like 2 seconds to stand in the pocket. You're not going to play well no matter who you are. This offensive line in Tennessee is just awful, and something needs to be done. Even after the game, left tackle Tyler Lewan said it's one of the worst games he's ever played in his entire life.
So, wow.
Yeah, they played awful. The Texans didn't look much better in this game if you go back and look at it. And it was 2 plays were really the difference in this game. I want to see Mariota come back. I wanted to touch on this real quick. But to your point where you said it, come back as fast as possible, to me I'm just thinking, like, why push it? You got a young
guy.
Yeah,
you're right.
You know, if he's feeling 100%, like, let him go. But we're 1-6 right now. This is not a playoff-relevant team anymore. Let him rest if he needs to. And start figuring stuff out. You know, this offensive line needs to prove drastically if the Tennessee Titans want to make any move, no matter who's the quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Maybe I did jump the gun a little bit, not thinking more of the terms of their record. Raiders 34, Jets 20. This was my upset pick of the week. And I'm going to tell you right now, the Raiders are for real. The Jets defense is still one of the best in the league, and they pretty much dismantled them. I made the notion to a few of close friends of mine that, you know, that this Raiders team will make the wild card in the playoffs if they continue on the streak. They may even be able to contend with that division as well. Jets, I think, you know, we already talked about the quarterback situation, so I'm not going to sponge on the Jets side of the ball with the Raiders. Look out, AFC. They are coming, and they are coming strong.
The Raiders are really good. I'm really happy that they picked Derek Carr. I think he's been just completely fantastic and with the weapons that they've given him. I'm really, really happy for Derek Carr and the Raiders as a whole. They deserve this, the fan base and the team. And then on the Jets, we've already touched on it. It's the quarterback situation. QB situation there is looking a little dire, so I don't know. But on the Jets side, it's just they showed to me that without Fitzpatrick in the game that they're not going to be as good with Geno Smith or whoever's going to start next. But the Raiders, man, they're for real, and they might actually make the playoffs this season because the AFC, some of those wild card spots are still for grabs. And with the Jets faltering, the Bills not playing well, and the NFC South, the AFC South being bad, the Raiders could sneak into the playoffs at 9-7, Raiders 8.
Yeah, the Raiders have been playing great. At the beginning of the season, a lot of people were picking the Raiders as their, their surprise team or their sleeper team. And I naysayed it. I didn't think they were going to be that good, but I was wrong this season. And it's obvious so far the way they've been playing. For everybody who's listening to this show and is a listener of the show, if you tune in on Sunday morning and you hear Richard say that the Raiders are going to win, just empty your bank and bet on the Raiders. Because every time Rich picks them, they win. Like, it's what, 3 weeks in a row you pick them, when you pick them, they've won now. It's ridiculous. But, they've been playing really great football, you know, and they have the right pieces. They have a young wide receiver who looks amazing, Amari Cooper. David Carr is probably the best young back in this league. Or one of the best, if not the best. Murray's been playing well. The defense, I mean, the ageless Charles Woodson, who's like tied for first in interceptions right now. This team's been playing really great football. As for the Jets, you know, we talked a lot about that earlier, the quarterback situation. And that's going to have a huge effect on how their season goes this year. And it'll be interesting to see forward what they do at the quarterback position and what decisions they make. It's sad to see him go because this defense in New York's been playing great. And both of these franchises are long-suffering franchises that both look like they have pretty solid teams this year. The quarterback situation could ruin that for the Jets, but we'll see heading down the road.
We got about three more games to cover, so we're doing it. I think we're going to be okay on time. Seahawks 13, Cowboys 12. Okay, this was my takeaway. I read an article that says, will the Seahawks recover from the Super Bowl hangover? You haven't beaten a team above 500 yet, so you can't say that. They're not contenders. They're still pretending on the whole league, and everyone's buying into it. I'm going to say it now. The Seahawks will go one and done if they make the playoffs. As for Dallas, they need Romo, and they need him badly, and this was the Romo that I was going to touch on. The big news that I saw somewhere was that Romo is going to start practice this week. They don't expect him to play. I think it's more or less they're just, you know, going to start getting him his reps back up, letting him do some light throwing and stuff. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, I'm with the Seahawks. They're pretenders right now, and with Lockett out, that's really, really going to hurt this team because he's not only on special teams but on offense too. It's really going to hurt this team without that explosive speed playmaking. And the thing that drives me nuts about the Seahawks is that they do not go out and get a wide receiver. Since Percy Harvin and Golden Tatum and gone, they haven't won a Super Bowl. Last year, we also saw what happened in February of this past year, even though it's last year's season technically, but it was in February. We saw what happened with the lack of receivers. Russell Wilson was struggling in the Super Bowl, I think it was fair to say, until that last drive where everything seemed to be going their way. But to be honest with you, that one catch towards the end was lucky when that ball was swatted up in the air and the receiver caught it on the ground. But without a true number one receiver or linemen out there, I think the Seahawks are going to continue to struggle. The Cardinals are superior. They've already lost to the Rams. So the Seahawks are really putting – they've really put themselves in a hole in this division. But when you look at the Cowboys, I think once Tony Romo comes back, they're going to be the best team in the NFC East and probably could still win it. I think it was Brian who had said it before that the Cowboys really could still win this division, and that just goes to show you how awful the NFC East really is.
Yeah, there's a couple takeaways that I had from this game. First off, I think everybody saw that hit, and, you know, Peter touched on it and stuff. Man, that was, it was a brutal hit. I hope Lockett's able to come back. He's an exciting player to watch, and I never like to watch any player get injured. The other thing was Dallas was able, like, played really solid defense in this game. They were able to move the ball until they got to the red zone, and then it just all fell apart. This team was moving great from 20-yard line to 20-yard line. And then just completely shut down with the ball. Castle continues to struggle. But, you know, you plugged in, you know, a middle-of-the-road quarterback in the middle of the season. I mean, what do you expect? You know, no one was thinking that Castle was going to come in here and look like Aaron Rodgers. That's a tough situation to walk into for him. And I think exactly what, you know, Peter said, this team does have a real shot at winning their division still. You know, the Cowboys' defense has been playing pretty solid football. You know, if the offense could have capitalized, you know, and the Greg Hardy got the interception, they said it was the first of his career. You know, they were in the red zone then, couldn't score. You know, it kept working out like that for the Cowboys and was unable to get their offense going. But when Romo comes back, I think that changed drastically. And with the defense, the way they've been playing, this is a team that really could make a run at the playoffs as soon as Romo's back. On the other side of the ball, the Seahawks are struggling. You know, this defense continues to play pretty, you know, I mean, okay, pretty good, but not the way that they were used to them playing. Although I will say that Richard Sherman handled Dez Bryant this weekend. The offense hasn't found a rhythm yet. And everybody was so quick to jump on the Russell Wilson bandwagon, and he was a quarterback that was made by his defense. This is not a top-10 quarterback. This is not an elite-level quarterback. You know, and he's showing it this year. Russell Wilson struggles. The offense has struggled this season. They still haven't found a way to use Jimmy Graham besides using him as a blocking tight end, which blows my mind. You know, this is a team that's really in great danger of missing out on the playoffs after playing for two Super Bowls in two consecutive years.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting. Like we, a lot of good points on that topic. Real quick. We are not going to have time to do the Monday Night Football game. We are going to give a real quick rundown on this Broncos-Packers. Broncos 29, Packers 10. I was wrong. I thought Rodgers would be able to take care of the Broncos, but that wasn't the case. He had the worst starting number, the worst numbers out of all the starting quarterbacks on Sunday, which is ironic considering everybody says he's the greatest quarterback in the NFL, and that was including Matt Castle. 77 yards in the air, you're not going to beat Peyton Manning. Sorry, that's all I got on that one.
Yeah, that was just to watch Aaron Rodgers not play that well was sad, but give credit to the Denver's defense and the offense really played hand-in-hand on Sunday night. Outside of Peyton Manning's interception, I thought the offense was pretty good. So if they can keep that up, they might be a pretty dangerous team in the playoffs this year at the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, this Broncos team, I mean, show just how good this defense is. They're unreal right now. Best passing defense in the NFL, and they're like fourth in rush defense. They played an outstanding game, held Rodgers to 77 yards, no touchdowns, and like 62 completion percentage, I believe. Played a really great game, and that's what led to this victory. On the other side of the ball, I wouldn't worry about Rodgers, this isn't a sign of things to come. He played the best defense in football, and didn't do very well against them. But this isn't anything to worry. I think he bounces back fine next week against the Panthers, who have a solid defense. But, I mean, again, they don't. It's not a Broncos defense. So I don't think there's
not
a problem.
No, and real quickly, Panthers 29, Colts 26. The biggest news story, Andrew Luck's 3 interceptions. Pep Hamilton recently just got fired, like within the last hour. I still think the Colts are going to win this division, as bad as it is.
Yeah, oh, man. The Colts just, I think finding the OC was just a horrible decision. I think the Colts, and, man, we could probably have a 2-hour show just on how bad the Colts are this year. And I really mean that in all sincerity, but just to kind of wrap it up, and if you were just that, the Colts, they made a lot of bad decisions. Jim Irsay needs to fire the GM and hire a new one. Chuck Pagano has been through a lot for this team. He fought cancer one and came back, and he's always done what this organization has asked of him. He took a team that won 2 games, took a number 1 overall pick, and took that team to the playoffs. And they've gone a step up every season in the playoffs, but I don't think this year they made the Super Bowl. So the Colts, you know what, just it really comes down to the GM and some of the players. They need to fix the defense, to get a Barrett off the line, to get perhaps more weapons for Andrew Luck. Otherwise, this team is just going to continue to stink. And Andrew Luck has no excuses for his turnovers, but my God, I mean, this team is just at a complete disaster.
Yeah, Peter said it exactly right. It is a complete disaster. You have Andrew Luck, who is a very talented quarterback. And, you know, he has decent receivers. He should be able to have good games. The 3 interceptions is inexcusable for this team. And this is one of those franchises that's in it's deep in this front office. They have problems, again, top to bottom, just as we've talked about with other teams earlier in this broadcast. But I want to bring over the Carolina Panthers real quick. Cam Newton playing really great football right now. Keeping his team undefeated. Greg Olsen having a career year. It's been fun to watch. The Panthers have a really good team right now, and I'm really excited to see the Packers and Panthers play next week and see just how real this Panthers team is.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because it's another that was supposed to be the potential undefeated teams. I'm going to give a quick rundown. There will be a Friday show, as far as I know. It probably won't be till after 10 o'clock at night. We've all got to get together and talk about a time that's going to be suitable for everyone. We're going to give our midseason awards, as far as MVP, Rookie of the Year, Player of the Year, all that other mess. Real quickly, I'm still trying to get Nelson Rivera's to get back with me for doing Sundays, so stay tuned for that one. That's about all I got. Any last minute words? We got a couple minutes left.
Well, kind of just around the Monday night game, I kind of ripped the Colts, but I really like what I'm seeing for the Panthers and Cam Newton this year, despite the lack of weapons he has. That defense has really come together. Tengen Jr. looks phenomenal compared to what he's looked like in the past, but I think Cam Newton has a legitimate shot to win the MVP this year, because he's literally carried that team on the offense every single game.
Yeah, right now for me, I don't know if I have Cam Newton as my MVP, but he definitely has to be in the conversation. He's definitely a top 3 player in this conversation. He's been playing lights out. It's been fun to watch. One thing I wanted to bring up quickly is what coach, if next coach to get fired, who do you think it is?
Caldwell.
Honestly, and I don't think he should be, is Chuck Pagano or Bill O'Brien, one of those two. I mean, God, Bill O'Brien is just a bum, but Pagano might go because Irsay is stubborn.
I was going to say Caldwell as well, but Pagano is a good answer. You can't go wrong by picking a coach in the AFC South.
Yeah, like I said, we're going to give a quick rundown. You know, we're going to do a little bit of P&P, or Peter and Pyle leftovers on Friday night. That's about all we got. 30 seconds left to go. We will catch you guys Friday. Stay tuned via Twitter, via Facebook on the time. Catch you guys later.